Blog Talk Radio.
Caught a brother doing bad, then you put me on. Told me not to be ashamed of what I got. Never mind them hating niggas up and down the block fast. Held it down and the bills got paid. Said, go ahead, baby, do your same thing. And when God blesses us, I want a Lexus with a Honda we imagine in the Hamptons.
Girl, you must have lost your way from heaven. Could it be for me you came so far? Nothing like the ordinary woman. You're the very beat inside my heart. Girl, you're like a star, I knew so high. Shining like a diamond out in space. Girl, you're like my mother, my sister, my lover. Irreplaceable, nothing can take your place.
Girl, you are me, matching stone set, but guess, would you marry me, baby? And if you'd have me, I'd gladly give my life. Today I take the vow to make you my wife. Nothing temporary, no, it's quite contrary. Just you and me, for an eternity.
You must be on your way from heaven.
Yeah.
Make me a man,
baby.
More than a woman to me.
I'm nothing without you.
You're the blood.
To the Conscious Creative. I am your host, one third of your host. I'm kind of riding solo today. So much love and peace and blessings to Sage Mayotte and Marie Guerrero. You know, you guys are joining us here every week, but I'm here today with a special guest host by the name of Ebony Payne, who's going to introduce herself. Ebony, you there?
Yes, blessings and light. This is Ebony Payne English checking in. I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited.
Cool.
Oh, and happy National Poetry Month, Lorraine.
National Poetry Month to you, man. Have you been keeping up with the 30/30?
I have. I've been writing every day. That's just a tradition. So if you're old school, that's pretty much you can't help it. You have to do it. But, like, this is the first year I haven't been sharing my 30/30. I normally share them on my media sites and things of that nature, but my pen has just been really taking me apart personally and putting me back together, dealing with some personal things. And so my 30/30 has been more private than it's ever been. So that's happy because I feel like I'm making progress as an individual, as a human being. That's great. I'm looking for something that's going to give me permission to share because I love to share. So,
good deal. Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I haven't been, I've been writing every day and I've been sharing, you know, little poems here and there of what I've been writing just whenever I felt, you know, the need to put it online or whatever. But I have been writing every day and I know people are like, oh, you said you're doing 30/30 and we ain't seen 30
poems. What a lot of people forget is that we're artists, so a lot of our stuff is like out there for the world to see, but we're human beings first, right. And then on top of being a human being, we're women, so they're the full spectrum of emotions that we deal with and thoughts and energy, and not all of that is public. Some of that is just private, personal business, because you know, I write to enlighten and to educate and to motivate people, but I also write as a form of therapy for myself.
Right.
So, you know, when I need that therapy, my pen knows just what time it is, and it kicks in, and it gives me that whether I want it or not, it happens.
Right.
So that, you know, that's important to understand and embrace.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm the same way, man. It's just, you know, sometimes people just, they expect you to kind of be on all the time, you know what I mean, and want to share all the time. And, you know, there's a lot of times where I'm just like, I don't want to share. I just want to write. I want to get whatever I'm going through out. I just want to get it out. I don't necessarily want to share it with the world, you know. And, you know, the one thing I've also noticed is that artists, we're very protective of our stuff, you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You put yourself out there, and then, you know, when people begin to dissect it and kind of attack it, then you kind of feel some kind of way. So that's another thing that I go through is like, oh, I don't want to share this because I'd be damned if somebody, you know, is trying to tell me about what I'm writing and how I'm writing it, you know.
Like Erykah Badu said it best. Keep in mind, I'm an artist, and I'm sensitive about my shit.
We really are sensitive about our shit, man. So let's get into it, man. You know, what is poetry to you? What is what does poetry mean to Ebony Payne?
Well, there's a way that I can answer that, and it's I don't know if you're familiar with the author William Faulkner. He's a poet and a novelist. He lived 1890 to 1962, I think one of his most famous works, if I'm not mistaken, is The Sound and the Fury. I'm a big fan of his poetry, but I know that was a pretty famous novel of his that I guess most people will relate to. But this is what I put in the very beginning of all of my poetry books when I christened them. It's this quotation that he said that explains what poetry really means to me. As a coincidence, it's just what it means to him as well. So it says, "I believe man will not merely endure, he will prevail. He is immortal not because he alone among creatures has an inexhaustible voice, but because he has a soul, a spirit, capable of compassion and sacrifice and endurance. The poet's, the writer's duty is to write about these things. It is his privilege to help man endure by lifting his heart, by reminding him of courage and honor and hope and pride and compassion and pity. The poet's voice need not merely be the record of man. It can be one of the props to help him endure and prevail."
Wow.
Yeah, and I know it may sound like cliche or whatever, but that's really my mission statement in regards to why I write and what writing is to me, what poetry is to me, and why I continue to do it. It sums it up right there. That's the beginning and the end.
Awesome. That's you know, it's there's a couple quotes that I've researched that kind of fit why what I feel like my definition of poetry is. But one of the there's a poem that Sunny Patterson, you know, I love Sunny Patterson. There's a
Everyone
poem.
Loves Sunny.
He's like, how can you not, man? But there's a poem, and I don't really know what the name of the poem is. But in the poem, the beginning, and I'm going to play it a little bit later, but she, you know, she's saying how there's a definition of a word. That's the beginning of the poem. And then at the end, she's basically saying, you know, or in the poem, she's saying, you know, there's a one of her students asked her, you know, with so much going on in the world, basically, how can a poem change the world? You know, and in the poem, she's saying, you know, we can change the world by really living what we write. You know, we can do all of these things, and we can really define who we are by really living what we write, and not just writing things for entertainment purposes, or not just writing it for accolades or for applause or something like that, but just actually living what we write. We can change the world with words. And so to me, that kind of sums up the reason why I do poetry and how it is defined to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I found I was researching a lot of things, and one of the definitions that I saw that really stuck out to me, it didn't really say who it was from, but it was basically saying how this is in ancient Greek, poet or poetry simply means I create. And a poet is the creator, and the poem is the created. And there's a definition I found, and it said, poetry, in a sense, is the art of making nothing mean something. True poetry is often regarded as having no meaning but to the reader, but the one the reader ascribes to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so to me, I was just like, wow, you know, because a lot of times we try to, whenever, let's say there's someone who's never really experienced poetry, they know, you know, they have their own cliched definition of it or what they've been told or what they've heard. But when I try to describe poetry to people, a lot of times I find a hard time trying to describe it to them. You know what I mean? Because really, it really does, it's like, it's it's your own meaning. You know what I mean? It's your own, whatever the way the words are formed and whatever rhythm you give it, it's whatever it means to you at that time. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's how, you know, a lot of times I feel like that particular definition is perfect, you know, for as far as for me and the way I look at it, you know. When it comes to students, let's say, how do you define poetry to your students?
When I'm dealing with the young minds, I try not to deal with definitive statements. Mm-hmm. So it's all about response for them, because ideally when I enter the classroom environment, what I'm looking for is for them to pour something into me, and for me to be an opportunity to sort out all of the confusion and all of the information that they have access to, and give them some perspective and some organization and some direction to it. So like the most that I will say about poetry is it's a fluent expression, right, of an ideal or of a thought, you know, and that's where we begin, you know, with that framework, that foundation is that a fluent expression or whatever, because, you know, some of them have trouble even putting sentences together because they're not used to being able to communicate or being allowed to communicate or being asked to express their original ideas to an adult. So when we get into just starting off with basic fluency and your thoughts and ideas, you know, there's so much room for a creative environment there. We can go so much further with that as opposed to giving them a formal definition or talking about rhyme scheme or meter or any of that, labels. We get into that later, of course, because literature, it does have, within its rules, it does allow freedom, even within structure, but you have to know that structure and know those rules to break them and to innovate within them. So we do get into that, but the way we start is with the fluidity.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. So speaking of poetry, and I know we're going to get into some more, do you have anything in particular that you want to share at this time?
Well, yeah, I was going through my notebook today, and I found something that I wrote when I was like 14 years old. And I think that it's a good place for me to revisit, because mm-hmm. it was when I was dealing with a divorce. My parents, they went through a divorce, and, you know, my mother, she remarried, and it was really hard for me. It was really hard for me as a young woman dealing in middle school, dealing with a bunch of other stuff and emotions. And, you know, it was eighth grade. Eighth grade is already awful. You understand?
Right. Exactly.
You know, because you're deciding whether you're going to be a child or a teenager, you're either gonna, you know, grow up or not. You know, it's one of those things. And then it's just as a girl, you know, I was dealing with my body and my image and my mm-hmm. pimples, and it was just hard. And I found myself really clinging to my book or whatever. So this is the only poem I've ever written about my parents' divorce. And I don't know. I wanted to share it. Keep in mind, I'm an artist. I'm sensitive about my shit.
Right, even at 14, yes.
Even at 14. But it's called Consumption. I hated him. See, I promised to never fall in love with a stranger, because he was a stranger and he stole my love song. He came from Camp Lejeune because he was getting out of the Navy soon and he needed a place to stay. My father, a righteous man, gave him a place to lay, gave him a place to pray. See, he was close to him like his brother, so he made him a deacon. He helped my mom at the flea market on the weekends, and they became good friends. A few years later, my parents divorced, and I was forced from my home into an apartment. And I went into depression because my brother taught me the lesson that the stranger took my mother and made her his lover. And when my father discovered that the stranger had touched his wife, he vanished from my life. I hated him. I locked myself in my room and soothed myself with this tune. Every day, I'd play my favorite love song. One year after my parents' divorce, I was forced to confront the obscene as he announced he was going to marry my queen. At the wedding, when the bride's music came on, he began to play for her my favorite love song. And I hated him because there was no more us, just them. My heart was cold and hard. It had been permanently scarred. I turned my mind into a cell, chained and barred, consumed by hate. That was all I slept, did, and ate. I hated my mother for this terrible mistake. He would slouch on the couch eating chicken wings while my mom worked two jobs just to handle things, and I hated him. I hated him so much I couldn't bear my mother's touch because he touched her and she touched him, and there was no more us, just them. My father took my little brother and moved on. My older siblings were already long gone, and I was so alone. I hated him. I couldn't even pray for him. I couldn't even pray at all. I was too mad at God to even call. I began to fall victim to my own hate. Consumed, I became irate. And it never took anything off of my plate, only added to it. But when he took my queen and made her his wife, to my favorite love song, he ruined my life. And I never understood how to overcome that strife.
Wow.
And that was that. Yeah,
wow.
So, you know, typical emotional overreaction of a 14-year-old.
But the thing about it is, though, like, you were able to, even at 14, you were able to do what you do now. You know what I mean? You were able to capture, even at 14, you know, because it was very vivid. You know, everything that you were saying, I could see it. And you pulled me in to how you were feeling, and I'm just like, I hated him too. You know what I mean? Like, that's how that's why, you know what I mean? And to me, that's what poetry is about. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not saying that there's a right or wrong way to do it, but when you are really able to captivate by words and really get even a stranger and pull them into how you were feeling at the moment that you wrote whatever it was that you were feeling, to get them to be able to feel what you felt, that to me is true poetry. You know?
Yeah, and that which does good also does harm, right? So because I was very introverted as a child. So I internalized everything, and then no one, like even my teachers or anything, would ever know I was going through something or I was having like these thoughts or these feelings. Mm-hmm. You know, and because I was really good at just writing it out and then closing my book and then pretending like nothing ever happened.
Right.
So what went on was, and what this goes on far too often, we're so used to broken families and broken homes that the kids end up treated as if this is something that's so common,
mm-hmm.
that we should just let it, you know, move on, you know, just get over it.
Right.
You know, what's your problem? It becomes less about them and more about you as an adult feeling comfortable and feeling free to make your own choices and your own decisions in life.
Right.
And so nobody ever sat me down. My parents, they never sat me down and explained, you know, this doesn't mean I don't love you, but this doesn't mean that I don't love you as much as I did before. This just means that mommy and daddy are going through adult things.
Right.
You know, and we can't live together anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. Nobody explained that to me. So I just was going off of what I saw and what I heard from, you know, my older siblings who were older than me, so they knew more information than I did. And I was very reactionary. So
mm-hmm.
everything I thought, all of the thoughts that I was having this time and all the emotions I was having this time were completely reactionary, you know. And that was an opportunity for somebody to reach out to me and really, you know, explain things to me in a way that I could feel comfortable expressing the things I was feeling inside, because hate is a very strong and consuming emotion that has to go somewhere, because it won't stay inside of you.
Right.
It's too big to contain it inside of you. It has to go somewhere. You know, and I became violent. You know, I was a straight A student, but I was very violent. I was very violent. If you said the wrong thing to me on any day, you could get it, you know? And so, yeah, the poetry, me having my poetry was a great thing, but I also think that me having my poetry was a way for the adults in my life to avoid talking to me, because I seemed all right, because I wasn't talking. I was writing, you know? So
do you find yourself, like, going back to a lot of the stuff that you wrote when you were around that age, or say even from the beginning, from when you started writing poetry? Do you still go back sometimes and kind of revisit those things?
Now I do. Before I didn't. It would embarrass me. I used to hate reading. Like, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to read this poem in front of anyone because it would have embarrassed me. Because I'm very hard on myself and critical of myself as a writer, you know. And so I don't want to go back to the beginning when I didn't feel like I was very good. Who does that? But now that, you know, 30 is approaching, I'll be 30 on July 30th. And I know, right? You know, I can hang out with the grown and sexy people without them looking at me crazy.
Not true.
Exactly. You know, I can finally have a drink with my grandma. She was like 21, nonsense. Turn 30, and then we'll talk. But now I think midway through my return to Saturn, I'm having these feelings of I want to see my growth. I want to be cognizant of my growth. I want to know that I've made progress. I need to know. I need that. I need to know that this was everything I've been through has made me better. Because I can go back to 16 years ago and read this poem, and I can open my notebook and read what I wrote this morning and feel that I've made progress. And not just literally as far as, you know, me being a better writer or me being older, but I've made emotional, mental, and spiritual progress. I'm in a much better place. I'm at peace. I got peace. I don't hate my mother's husband anymore, you know? And I'm not angry at my dad. I'm not angry at my mom. Like, if anything, I'm more empathetic now because I'm grown enough to have gone through, you know, heartbreak and relationships ending poorly or not the way that I would have wanted, and losing a dear friend because we decided to be romantically involved and not knowing where to go after that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm in that place now where now I can understand that sometimes things happen between two people that are just inexplicable.
Right.
And it's not something either one of them wanted, but it just, life happens to us all. And everybody has their own way of dealing with it. And I know my parents love me to the best of their ability. But when you say that word ability, you have to understand not everybody's as able as you are. And part of the reason I'm able to love the way that I love is because my parents gave me more than what they had. You know? And so, yeah, I'm able to perpetuate that. And when I do have children, I'll be able to love them even better. But, you know, they'll love their kids better than I love them. And not that I didn't love them to the best of my ability. It's just that they will be stronger than I am.
Right.
So that is a goal, you know?
Yeah.
So I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I've done the same thing. Like, I you know, I'll go back and I'll reread some of the things that I wrote when I was younger. And I was the same way. Like, I was just so angry and I didn't know what to deal, I didn't know what to do to express those feelings. Like, I didn't, the only way I knew how to express my feelings was to hold it in. You know, my mom, you know, she did the best that she could, you know, and the way that she grew up, even the way that she responds to things now, the way that they dealt with things back in her day were to not talk about things. You know what I mean? Everything was a secret. Or if there was a problem, you don't talk about it. You know, you just let it go and it'll go away. You know what I mean? But I'm at the point now where I realize, like, I don't blame her for anything. She did the best. She did the best that she could do with what she knew. And at that time, and her raising me, it wasn't that she, you know, she did anything wrong. She just did the best that she could do with what
right.
she had. You know, I thank God that poetry was something that I was exposed to at such a young age. Like I was exposed to poetry at 5, and
wow.
to be 31 right now and to still say that poetry is still a major part of my life is a blessing, because I remember, you know, the school that I went to, it was a really small private school, and in order for us to come into school, our entry into school was, even at 5, we had to either recite a poem or a quote that we had learned the day before. That was our only entrance. That was the only way that we could enter into school every day. And every time we said a poem, we had to then say our name. You know, my name is Taryn Warwood, and I have a great mind. That was our entrance, and that was my exposure. You know, so, you know, it was a blessing that was something that I was exposed to. But the crazy part about it, it's not crazy, but the ironic part about that is, as I got older, I learned that the reason my mom exposed me to poetry and the reason she exposed me to piano and a lot of the different things that she exposed me to throughout my childhood was because these were things that she had a passion and a love for when she was my age that my grandfather would not allow her to do. So she was doing a lot of things vicariously through me and, you know, in a way kind of making me do those things. It just so happened that I fell in love with them. But I did it because I loved it. But the reason that I was exposed to it was because she wanted to do it and she couldn't when she was my age. You know, so it's like it's so like ironic how there's like a domino effect of things and how our parents raise us and how their parents raise them and so on and so forth, you know, and how it affects us today. But it what's also amazing to me is how a lot of us at this day and in this day and age we can go back and not blame our parents for anything. But
yeah,
we can recognize, okay, look, I don't blame you, I don't fault you for anything. Because that's how you were raised. And then that's how your father was raised, and then that's how his mother or his, you know, her mother was raised. So it's like it's amazing to me how connected but disconnected we all are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was. It's all part of the progress.
Mm-hmm.
It's all part of the knowledge of self is the most evasive thing, but it is the only thing, you know. And what I mean by that is, until you know yourself, you will never truly know anyone else, and you never will truly know God. You know, you have to do your work, mm-hmm. right? And part of my work, my process was. My mentor, Dr. Dana Dinar, my Baba, as I would call him, during my tenure at Florida State University, he explained something to me and a group of other indigenous women, you know, that we are all so afraid of being our mothers, right? But what you have to understand in order to really truly make progress in your own life is that you are your mother,
mm-hmm.
okay? You are 100% your mother, and you are 100% your father. And through that culmination of those two beings, you are then yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are 100% of each part. And through them coming together, they have created something different in its entirety. And that's just a part of sacred metaphysics altogether. You know,
right.
that's the principle, the seed, the egg. You know, are both something completely separate. However, you are both of those things,
mm-hmm.
and the culmination of, and they're, you know, so lies the fetus. You know, like,
yeah.
But you can't detach yourself from the egg and say, oh, I'm not an egg. You can't detach yourself from the seed and say, oh, I'm not a seed, you know,
right.
but then say, I exist. That's
yeah.
not how that works.
Right.
You know, you have to accept that you are both,
mm-hmm.
and you are individual.
And both parts, okay. both parts make up who you are.
Correct. And once I came to terms with that, that was a really hard day. Dr. Denard said that to me. He said that to us, me and my sister. And, you know, there were some of us who just took it and accepted it at face value, said, okay, Baba, you know, let the work begin. And there
yeah.
were the other ones, like me, who's just a very strong-minded young lady, you know what I'm saying? She thought I knew everything about everything at 19. I thought I knew everything about everything. And I was like, what is he talking about? I am not my mother. Oh, my God. Right? I'm not my mother. Oh, my God. How could he say such a thing? You know, I went home and cried. How could he say such a thing? I'm not. You know? And a really important part of my process was that realization that, oh, you know, he
yeah.
was right.
Uh-huh.
Oh. You know? And that was a breaking moment for Ed. It broke me.
Yeah.
Because I realized how stupid I'd been and how stupid I'd sounded, you know, to people that I admire and respect all these years. Of me saying, you know, I don't want to be, this is who I don't want to be. Except,
right.
you know, I really didn't even know who I was to be in a position to say who I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I got to know who I was that I realized I am my mother, and that there's nothing wrong with that because I'm the very best of her.
Right.
You know,
right.
and I am my father, and there's nothing wrong with that because I am the very best of him. And through the very best parts of those two people, I am more powerful than I've ever given myself credit for because I've never really fully embraced the things that give me power or that
right.
give me substance or
yeah.
that make up this person. That I know so little about.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, man, poetry.
Yeah.
Poetry is the reason that I even came to terms with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a way to look at yourself. It's another mirror.
It is, and it kind of forces you to. You know what I mean? Like, there's some times where I'll go back and I'll read stuff, and one, not only do I go back and read stuff, and I'm like, no, I don't even remember writing it. But then I'll read it, and then I'm just like, wow, like it's like a slap in my own face. Clearly, I didn't understand, you know, when I wrote it, but it was meant for me to go back and reread it and be like, oh, you big dummy. This is, you know, what you missed.
Red Fox, yeah.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, because It really took me a long time. Like, who my mother is, as much as I adore everything that she has always been to me, I never wanted to be compared to her, right? And,
right.
But if I had to choose between her and my father, she was the one that I would have rather been, you know, compared to than him because
I haven't
seen him. I don't even remember. All I know is they tell me I look like him. You know what I mean? I haven't seen him since I was 12 and all these things. And, you know, he was this and he was that. But the older I get, the more I realize, like, I'm just like, oh, my God, I am my mother. Oh, my God, I am my father. Like, it is mind-blowing. It is so mind-blowing when you have that realization because it's like you spend your whole life trying to fight it, and then it's just like, oh my gosh, like I really am these people. I am their creation.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So there's a piece that I wrote after that epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that you said your co-host thing with my aunt, because the piece is called Secrets of My Aunt, you know. And my aunt, for those of you that don't know, it's the principles of truth, right? So saying Secrets of My Aunt is saying Secrets of Truth. It was what the comedic pharaohs or the ancient Egyptian pharaohs used to govern the people by. You know, these principles of truth and light and prosperity. And but when I had that epiphany or whatever, this is the piece that came from it. So it's my open letter to truth, if you will.
Okay.
There you are. I've been looking all over for you. I reached for you some time ago, cloaked in chained clothes, hands full of old canvas soiled with rancid conclusions drawn by murdered men whose tales I continue to tell while tailing their footsteps in search of convictions worthy of a movement. Stagnancy is an illusion. For we know this planet is kinetic by design, so we also know that dormant develops decline, later descending to destruction. You are not as constructive as I believe. You break things, especially hearts. Particularly relationships, the taste of you on my lips is a putrid disgust. You are not as sweet as love. You have not the spice of a lie. You divide my entireties. Very rarely do you pick up the pieces. Very rarely do I gather my piece. It's the strangest thing, still I'd rather be with you. In chaotic solitude, rude, outcast from punitive powers, than to spend another hour deceived, hoodwinked, bamboozled, yeah, the whole kit and caboodle, the same package they offered the savage was brought to my doorstep. I decided to take the elevator, but they did not celebrate her. They made light of my feathers and told me to get my head together. You are not always the smartest choice. You are never the loudest voice. You are the faint buzz of a mosquito positioned beside my ear. You are the parasitical presence I fear. You are the blood on my bitten tongue. You are no fun. You are no games. You have no shame. You are pain. You are growth. You are not hope. You are a knowing. You are freedom. And I have found you at last. We've all had you at first. Our behaviors are learned. You are the only thing I deserve, but you cannot be earned. You cannot be created. You cannot be destroyed. You are devoid of impurity. You are surety. You are. You were. You will be.
I gotta find a snap soundbite or something. Also, there. So what else inspired that? Like, what was the moment that really sparked that? Was it the realization of who
well,
you were?
Yeah. Well, when I found out who I was. And what I was, I became honest, right?
Uh-huh.
And I started having these honest moments with people. And then, you know, for some reason, I believe that, okay, I'm being honest with you, that that's supposed to be something that's celebrated, you know, that we're supposed to hug and kiss and sing Kumbaya and then move forward with progress, right? Progressively, right? But what happened when I started telling the truth to people about what I discovered and you know, what I'd done, where I was wrong, where I could have been better, you know, what role I played in the destruction of our relationship or our trust or those things, those type of things, right? Or even just being honest with myself and thinking I was supposed to be at peace somehow and be, you know, waking up should be easier. Life should be easier now. I know who I am now.
Right.
You know, I'm honest.
Right.
I know the truth. I found the light. Now this is where life gets easy. wrong. Everything everything came crashing down, you know. I was alienated from my closest friends, the family that I was close to, that I wasn't even beefing with. I started beefing with, you know what I'm saying? Like, just me being honest, me being open, me saying right. I know who I am and this is who I am and I would like to share who I am with you, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized we're disillusioned about what truth is really. And we have false expectations of what honesty brings and what happens when honesty is present, you know?
Right.
Because the truth is just that. It's just the truth, right? Mm-hmm. And it has consequences. And those consequences are not always positive because you cannot control how other people will react to light.
Right. That's true.
Some people are blind,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some people just are overly sensitive to the point where they can't grasp it. They'd rather continue in darkness because the light burns.
Yeah.
There are people who are vampires, you know, like, and when I say vampires, I mean that figuratively speaking. They are creatures of the dark.
Right.
You know, and just you even attempting to share light around you alienates them. They don't want any part of it. They can't handle it. It'll be fatal for them right now at this point in their process. They're just not there.
Because they're not
ready. So you have to, they're not ready. Exactly. Just like I wasn't ready to receive it when my baba tried to give it to me in college. I wasn't ready. And I rejected him.
Mm-hmm.
And I took offense to the things he was trying to tell me. Out of love, he was just trying to love me. And because he loved me, he had to be honest with me.
Right.
You know? And I wasn't ready to receive that at that time. And that's what happened in my life. And even that, you expect the whole universe to respond, okay, I'm ready now.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have things to go through. Okay, now that we're being honest, now let's do these tests that we failed before. Now let's take these tests again now that we're being honest.
Right.
And now that we're aware of ourselves. Now, let's take these tests again, okay? The tests don't go away. You flunked them. You got to go back and do your work, mama.
Yeah.
And you have to pass this time. You have to get it right,
mm-hmm.
you know? And mm-hmm. so when I started that telling process, you know, retaking these tests, I became depressed because I was like, well, you know, I feel like I should be doing better. You know, I'm smarter. I'm wiser, you know? Why aren't I discovered? Why aren't I famous? What's going on? You know, I had this epiphanic moment where the whole world is supposed to respond right now. I'm supposed to be powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever I think is supposed to just manifest, you know, come to pass. What's happening? You know, and I was angry and frustrated and just confused. Like, I felt lied to. I felt played.
Mm-hmm.
But then this peace came to me. And this peace is me, you know, affirming that truth is just truth.
Right.
And no, it's not the most divine thing there is. It's not like falling in love. It doesn't feel like that. You know, and it hurts people.
Yeah.
And it breaks things. And it's sharp-edged. It's dangerous. And offensive.
And
controversial.
The foundation of truth, it really is a test of patience. On the individual part. It is a true test of patience.
Yes.
Unlike anything in any other anything. You know what I mean? Like it is because not only do you have to be patient with yourself, you also have to be patient with the universe. And then you also have to be patient with other people and knowing that they're not going to accept your truth. Even though you found the truth for you. That's like that and I'm saying this because this has been the biggest and the hardest test for me. I've never been at a point where I am now. And I'm at a point really now, and I was thinking about it this morning before as I was going to church. I was like, you know, I really am okay with being alone. I really am okay, you know, with being, and I was like reflecting, and I was like, oh, man, like I did this. I was able to do this week. And I did all these things by myself. And I'm like, wow, this is what true freedom of yourself, you know, like, wow, this is what truth to me being true to myself feels like, and it feels damn good. You know what I mean? And the fact that there's people who don't understand, there's people I've lost, there's friends I've lost, I'm okay with that, and I'm at peace with it. I'm more at peace with it now than ever before. And it feels good because at the end of the day, I'm being honest with myself. And one of the things that the pastor was saying this morning, he was, you know, I'm not the most religious person, but I definitely am spiritual. And one of the things that he was saying was it's amazing how when you are at your weakest point and when you feel the at your lowest and when you recognize your weaknesses, that's when you become strong. That's when you become the strongest, when you are able to recognize, oh my goodness, yes, I do have this fault, that fault, and that fault.
Yes.
I am jacked up. I'm tore up from the flow up. I'm all around just jacked up. But that's when you become your strongest. That's when you become your strongest. When you accept your truth and you accept who you really are. And not only do you accept who you really are, but you accept your place in other people's lives. That's when you really, really become strong. We do have a caller on the line. For those of you who are listening online, if you want to call in, please feel free to do so at 347-826-7536. When you call in, I'm going to say the last four. Make sure you press 1, I'm sorry, so that I know that you want to speak to us. So caller, I'm going to call it the last four of your number, 7218. Caller 7218, you are now live. Welcome to the Conscious Creative.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
It's Maggie.
What's up, Maggie?
Peace, love.
What's going on? How you guys doing?
We're good.
Bless. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. I just woke up from a nice nap.
Must be nice, man.
So, hey, when my body tells me it's time, you know, I have to kind of listen sometimes. So
right.
Today was one of those days where it was like, you know what, you got to get some rest. Otherwise, we just going to pass out somewhere. So,
right.
You know. But I was listening to the show, and I just caught what Taryn was talking about. And I think that we all come to that point in our lives where we know that we have some effed up things going on about us. A lot of us try to stay in denial, and then we continue to question why certain things continue to happen to us. And one of the things that I've learned in finding spirituality over these past few years is that not until you react in a different positive way to the same situations that occur to you, you're going to continue to be tested with that same situation. So you just have to learn how to take things for what they are and not be afraid to accept it, because at the end of the day, the universe is here to help you, not to hurt you. So it's almost like why not pay attention to what is really meant for you to see, and we pay attention to all the negative things that people have to say about us, and we entertain that, you know, and waste so much energy and time on, you know, all the negative things that people have to say about us. I have people that say negative things about me every day and probably think negative things about me every day just because they don't know who I am and only because of what they know from social media. But at the end of the day, we all know that social media is a mask for a lot of things. So, you know, I just, for myself, I've always been one to kind of like, I don't really give a damn what people think, and I think that's gotten me a long way. It's kind of hurt me in some areas because, you know, a lot of the times we get in that mind frame where we don't care what people think, and sometimes the people that are trying to really shed some light on certain situations, we kind of ignore it, not purposely, but because it's like one of those things where, okay, are you really telling me these things to help me, or are you telling me these things to be judgmental and kind of put off what you feel about yourself on me? So it's a catch-22, and you just have to pick and choose, and whatever you feel is right in your heart. Honestly, learn how to pay attention to your first mind and your gut, because it's usually right. You know, even if it doesn't feel right, it's probably right. You know, so That's pretty much what I have to say.
You know when truth is spoken. Like, I always say, you know my op when you hear it. You know, it's familiar to you, and it stings. You know.
Yeah, it does.
So you have to use that discernment when choosing what you accept from people and what you won't. You know.
Yeah. So I as far as, you know, her speaking on friends, losing friends, I say that sometimes, you know, you really do lose friendships, but I feel like when people grow and change, those people that were in your life and they're still there through your growth and your change, those people were meant to be there. Those who are no longer there, it's either they're no longer there for their best interest or for your best interest. You don't know. But I think that a lot of people use ending friendships as an excuse to cover up and not deal with some of the effed up things that they have done as well. So, you know, it's kind of like you still have to look at yourself when you lose relationships and relationships change, because it's not just the person that you lost that connection with. There was also something within yourself that either changed or, you know, quote unquote, went wrong. So a lot of times we don't have an understanding and we won't have an explanation. But what I try to do is not hold grudges against anybody, because, you know, a lot of times whatever seasons we were together, that was just what it was. And it's no hard feelings or nothing like that. It's just, you know, it is what it is. And you just got to keep it moving.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, too, you know, I mean, one of the other things that the pastor was saying today, he was like, you know, it, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what your journey is. And it doesn't matter what the other person's journey is. All that matters is your personal journey. All that matters is your personal journey, your personal relationship with the Creator, with whoever you look up to, with that whoever. All that matters is your personal journey. Everything else will fall into place. Once you focus on your own individual self and you accept yourself and you are honest with yourself, and then you go, you know, you realize, you know, that you're like your mother. You realize that you are your father. When you bring all of those things and you combine all of those things together to focus truly on your own individual journey, all those other things, all those other components will fall into place. The people who are supposed to be in your life at whatever time, they'll come. And the relationships that are supposed to come, they'll come. Everything will fall into place just as it should. But all that matters is that you focus on what your journey is and what your task is and what your purpose is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it goes for family, too, you know, because family has a way of making you feel guilty sometimes for kind of like, it's not so much that you're not paying attention to what's going on with Family Matters, is that you know you can't consume yourself what's going on with Family Matters, because then you're going to be off track of what it is that you're trying to do for yourself.
And
so, you know, I felt it a little bit when I went home to deal with family funerals and things like that a month ago, and it's like, how dare anybody make me feel bad about being brave from leaving a city in a situation at a very young age where I knew that it was not going to do me well to stay there. So it's like when I go home, people act like I don't have problems and I don't have issues or whatever the case going on in my life because I'm in Florida where there's palm trees and beaches. Like, come on, you know what I mean? Like, I still have things going on in my life personally that I deal with, such as trying to run businesses, building my artist, you know, building a radio avenue. Like, there's a whole lot of things that I'm pursuing and I'm trying to do, and what they fail to realize is it's for my family. You know what I'm saying? Like, let me get to a point where I can focus and help those in bad situations. Right now, I can't. You know, I can give you advice and kind of like lead you by my example, you know, by changing things that I know that I need to change in my life and had to stop doing in my life in order for things to happen and open up for me. So, you know, and it's a kind of a lot of pressure, too, because I'm the oldest and my siblings. So it's like every day I struggle with that. I try to make sure that, you know, my middle sister is an evangelist. You know, my younger sister, she's always been like quiet and paying attention to what it is that we're doing and following our footsteps. So I do my very best to, number one, stay true to who I am, but at the same time try to be a better me every day and just lead by example. So at the end of the day, like Taryn just said, as long as you focus on you and kind of like not worry about all the BS, I know it's hard, especially with social media and subliminal messages and all that crap that goes on, but just know that whenever you're on a path to success, negative energy is coming off form, you know, so you just got to be careful and just pick and choose.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Definitely.
So I'm done taking over y'all's show.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
No
man.
Worries. You're more than welcome. It's good to hear from you, Queen.
I appreciate you, Magic.
No doubt. I will let you guys go. I'm all finished watching the basketball games, you know, and enjoy Sunday. Taryn and the rest of the cast, Marie, I always say her name wrong. I know. Sage Mayat. Sage Mayat. How do you say it, Taryn?
Mayat.
Sage Mayat. Okay.
Yes.
And Alex over there in boot camp, maybe you'll listen to this broadcast. You guys are doing a great job with the Conscious Creative. I see that you share it often. Your numbers continue to grow. So just keep doing what you do, and, you know, everything else will fall in place like you just said.
All right, homie. I appreciate it, man.
All right, later.
All right. All right, so we have, excuse me, we have another caller that's holding. So, caller, I'm going to call it the last four of your number. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Last four, 2709, caller 2709, you are now live on the Conscious Creative.
Hello, ladies. How are you doing today?
We're doing well.
How are you?
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Haven't been asleep, been up working and all day and all night, and come check on my Facebook, and there's this awesome radio show to come check out, so I'm listening.
Cool. We're glad to have you. We're glad to have your listening ear.
To the host, I apologize. I haven't read everything thoroughly, but your two ladies that you have with you today, awesome individuals, and everything that they say, it's really real. The one lady, Love Reigns, she's just like her name. When you see her, you feel love. You see it. And then the other lady who's there, Miss Payne, I'm happy to say that I'm having the opportunity to be around her in this community that's here in Jacksonville that's got poets and a very powerful, very diverse, and very connected person. A lot of people think that I'm like a real jerk about how I do things, but I know that my life here in Jacksonville has a purpose, and my purpose is definitely to do everything that I can physically to make sure that every opportunity that we have to be able to use the media of poetry and spoken word to send off positive messages that are uncorrupted by commercialism or religiosity and, you know, other things like that, it's to happen, because there's so much to be said and there's so much spirit in what they have to say that comes from a place that can't be judged. You can only feel it. And I just want those ladies to continue.
Thank you, definitely. And who's this?
Dante.
Dante, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it. I appreciate your words, man. So when it comes to poetry, what is it to you? How does poetry speak to you?
My best friend growing up as an only child, and this is only, you know, metaphorically speaking, was Prince. So every time I think of words and lyrics, it's always on a very romantic side. So a lot of times people lose me whenever they talk about struggles, because I grew up gifted and with parents who came from the gutter, who showed me where the gutter was but sheltered me from it and just showed me a better life. Miss Payne did say, it gets to a point where you just decide to stop and embrace, and you do actually embrace things. And when I finally embraced not wanting to live my parents' path and keep on going to jail over and over again for no reason,
right.
I began to see the the poetry that's in the day, you know, when the wind blows, when you're wishing for something positive to happen and God breathes on you. It's letting that spirit be alive, and it's not about the concrete, and it's not about the words that are coming through the media or, you know, your favorite sitcom or your favorite melodrama that's on TV, but it's about what happens if none of that's there. How do we communicate? How do we make a better day? How do we make each other happy and ourselves happy? That's poetry to me. That's really, really poetry to me. Even the expression of not even when you come to the point where you're not, when you're by yourself and you are alone, but you're not lonely. You're
right.
Yeah, you know, this is like, hey, there's a universe inside of me, you know. And when I began to appreciate the universe that I know is inside of me and my capabilities, that's when I was also able to, I am now able to really give of myself to want to see other people's visions be seen outside of our local venues that we have here. Uh-huh. I know every time that I go to this one event that's called The Cypher, I always feel like I'm in First Avenue. I always feel like I'm walking into the set of Purple Rain, because somebody that night is going to say or do something that $5 is just a token to, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I want to see that alive. I used to do poetry, but it was always like, you know, your eyes are brown, I want you to always be inside my heart. that kind of stuff from junior high school. It's just a wonderful way to communicate. And I sometimes even like, and I'm even shy from it, but I just like talking to young ladies in particular, just poetically speaking, just something soft and unabrasive that's just, you know, nice.
And so, right.
You know, hey, what's up? What you doing? You want to go out? To be my girl? You know, that kind of stuff. So yeah. It's just a beautiful way to speak as well.
Yeah.
Well, and piggybacking off of something that he said, Love Rains, about people's perception. You know, some people think I'm a jerk, the way that I handle things and this and the third. It's people's perception, it bleeds over into art, right?
Right.
It's just like a painting. Poems are no different, you know, or an interpretive dance. You know, it's in the eye of the beholder. Whatever somebody wants to take from it has nothing to do with the creator's intent, right? Because I might have written a poem, you know, with the intent to make somebody feel happy. But when they read it or when they hear me perform it, they might take feelings of nostalgia, feelings of sadness because it makes them think of something, it reminds them of a time, feelings of anger because something I said might have offended them. That's their baggage,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's their work, that's their process, you
wow.
know. And as an individual, I try to live my life, you know, that way. I try to think of my life as a poem, you know. There are many people that are going to observe this piece. They're going to observe this piece, and whatever they take from it is what they're going to take from it. And that's something I really can't control. The way people look at me, that's something I can't control, and that's something I've had to learn to release and I'll shake, you know,
and
let it lie. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Doctor. I appreciate it.
I got another poetry event to go to tonight by another awesome gentleman, Moses West, here in Jacksonville. So I hope that I get to see you guys out there tonight.
All right. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
So, again, for anyone who's listening online, if you want to call in, make sure you dial 347-826-7536 and press 1. I found this poem by you know, one of my all-time favorite poets, Nikki Giovanni, and the poem is called Choices, and I think it kind of fits into everything that we're that we're talking about, and it goes, it says like, it says this: if I can't do what I want to do, then my job is to not do what I don't want to do. It's not the same thing, but it's the best I can do. If I can't have what I want, then my job is to want what I've got and be satisfied that at least there is something more to want. Since I can't go where I need to go, then I must go where the signs point, through always understanding parallel movement isn't lateral. When I can't express what I really feel, I practice feeling what I can express, and none of it is equal, I know. But that's why mankind alone, among the animals, learns to cry. So I think that, right. Like, I mean, you know, that right there, it definitely says everything that we've been talking about, man. You know, we have to be able to take what we are given and do the best that we can, you know, with what
Absolutely.
We have. You know, and it's something Absolutely. That I know that my mom and my grandparents used to say all the time, you know, I'm doing the best I can with what I have, you know, and that's all, at the end of the day, that's all you can do. You know, you don't owe anything to anybody. You don't owe an explanation to anybody. You don't owe a damn thing to anybody. You know, all that matters is what's going on between you and your creator. And I want to get into into this poem by Sunny Patterson that I was talking about earlier. Did you have anything you wanted to say before I go into this, Ebony?
No, not at all. I think that Nikki Giovanni, that piece, Choices, it's so much of what we need to understand on a day-to-day basis just to get through the life stuff, you know, because everybody is experiencing their own struggles. So like Maggie was saying, you know, they look at her family, and they think that she's not going through things because her scenery has changed. Right. But, you know, everybody is going through that. The wealthiest of people, the poorest of people, the most beautiful of people, the most ugliest of souls, they're still going through their own stuff,
right.
You know?
Right.
But there's a method to all of that matters. If you could just, you know, control what you can, which is the way that you look at it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, no matter who you are, no matter what you're going through, it all seems that much more manageable, you know, and it all seems that much more temporal, that struggle. If you can change your outlook, change your perspective, what is there to learn from all of this? You know, just ask yourself, what's the lesson here? What am I supposed to be learning? You know, that's important, and that's my governing law. That's what I live by. What am I to learn from this? You know, it can't be all bad. What am I to learn from this? You know, tests are only there to show what we've learned and to improve on our skills.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's true.
They're only here to give us, you know, some form of calibration. Okay, we're here. We were here. Now we're here. And to improve us and to better us. That's it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So how can you be mad at that, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever. It's not supposed to be easy, you know, but it will be worthwhile. It will be, you know, something that is for the best, that is in your best interest. And that's the way I try to look at it. So, yes, thank you for sharing that poem. Very inspiring.
It's one of my favorites, man. And this poem I'm about to go into is another one of my favorites. I listened to it. I swear I listen to it like 5 to 10 times a day. Not only because I'm Sunny Patterson, but I love the words in this poem, and it truly speaks to me. So I want to keep us live here, and I'm going to go into this poem by Sunny Patterson. So I don't know if you've heard this one before.
And many congratulations to Dada Sunny. Sunny, about a month ago, she gave birth. Her second child.
Right.
So many congratulations to the queen and her husband. I know they are overjoyed, and I know her son, we call him Beam, but Jabril is his real name. I know he's thrilled about it. So many, many blessings to Sister Sunny Patterson. Yes.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I definitely piggyback off of that. And so hopefully if Sunny's listening, or maybe she'll listen down the line, I hope she will appreciate us sharing this particular poem, who, like I said, it definitely touches me. So here we go.
There's a definition of a word, and it states that a word is composed of two parts, and that's reflection and action. So that means if one part is sacrifice, there's the other suffers as well. So I'm sure to tell the students in my writing class that we must be mindful of the words that flow from our mouth. And we should also be concerned with how they come out. You know, we talk about things like compassion and sincerity and nation and community and how trained our eyes they have to be to see that though some centuries have passed, slavery's past is present and evident. Chains still drag and bags get heavier. And then the sister, she heard this and looked at me. She folded her arms and began to speak. She said, Mama Sunny has seen that we just go from bad to worse. Like everything's in reverse. Like what's wrong is right and what's right is wrong, she asked them. She said, well, how do we solve these problems you speak of? And how in the world do we right all these wrongs? And I respond that we right them by writing new poems. And we write them by singing redemption songs. We write them by living our life like the goal is to be much greater than the day that came before. So we write them by being grateful just because the sun rose, or just because the moon glows, or just because the grass grows. We write them by writing and singing and living, by touching and praying, by giving and receiving, by loving and affirming, by standing and knowing and feeling and being faithful to this God that we claim to believe in, and serve him in a manner that our children might see how we come from a line of kings and queens, of prophets and dreamers, diviners and speakers and sayers of words who give life and light when the dead of the night engulfs all the earth and blind is the sight and still is the birth. But the children of our children's children will say how they are not ashamed to proclaim that the name of our God, it will rain through the rain and the sun and the fog, or whatever the weather and all of our days they can be as the seventh. And we will rest just knowing that heaven can be on this earth for its worth. I can slash my own throat if my speech doesn't speak of the faith that we seek, because our freedom must be as complete as the circuit of the sun from the east to the west, from the rise to the set. And they look and wonder, it is that serious? I answer yes. It's a matter of life and death. It's as sacred as breath, as precious as a kiss, or a remembrance of those who came before, who paved our path and opened our doors and gave of themselves so we might have more, is important because we owe our all. And as sure as the God of our ancestors endures, I pray that our speech is perfect and pure and pleasing to the force that governs this world. Only then can we say that our work is good. Give faith and ask for increased understanding and guidance and bravery on this path that we tried, and let goodness and guide make discerning our sight, because we can right all of these wrongs by really living what we want.
I swear that poem gets me every time. I don't care how many times I've listened to it. Once again, that was the beautiful Sunny Patterson.
Yeah, she gets me every time.
Man, she just leaves me speechless, man. Like, it's just, wow, you know. And so that's the one I said, you know, that's the poem I said that kind of just really gets to me and really kind of brings things back into perspective, you know. Whenever I feel like I'm kind of losing my way when it comes to poetry, because it really is, especially when you're performing a lot, it really is easy sometimes to get caught up in the accolades. It's easy to get caught up in you know, so-called fame of it all. And it's
or the lack thereof.
Exactly, or the lack thereof, exactly. It's easy to get caught up in all of the things that that are or are not. And so a lot of times I'll go back to that poem to kind of just bring things back into perspective for me and kind of just meditate on it and really just get back to what am I doing this for? What was I called for? What was the purpose? What is the reason? You know, why am I doing this? I'm not doing this to get awards. I'm not doing this to get pats on the back. I'm not doing this to be liked. I'm not doing this to be admired. I'm doing this because this is my purpose. I have a story, and my story I feel can change people, or to, you know, or help people in you know, for whatever, in whatever way, you know. So yeah, that poem is just whew.
It's edifying.
It is
edifying, you know. And it even on the show with the callers, between you and I, the conversation that we've had, anytime someone says anything, like I say that you'll recognize my eye when you hear it, or you'll know truth when it's spoken. You have that moment, that you know what I mean? Because it hits you. It's confrontational. It's strange. It is. And you'll have to respond. You have to respond, whatever. And that's audible.
Yeah, definitely. So when it comes to poetry, as far as the impact, you know, and do you, and this is kind of, you know, piggybacking off of what Sister Sunny just said in that poem, do you believe that the world can be changed with poetry or with words, period? Do you think that we can change the world with words?
Absolutely. I mean, come on. This is what got us here.
Mm-hmm.
The earliest findings is art. The earliest scribes or sacred texts are poems or songs. You know, the what is the Bible but, you know, poetry.
Right.
You know, the Quran is written in song. You know, all of this from the beginning of the time, if you look at the Sanskrits, if you look at the temple walls, the ancient Egyptian walls, like, if this is art.
Yeah.
Communication, you know, in an expressive, affluent, and expressive way. Is the way that we've passed history, is the way that we've interpreted science, is the way that we, as individuals, have perpetuated our intellectual being.
Mm-hmm.
And it will never go anywhere. It will always be here because that is what connects us to the Creator. You know, that is our essence, is to be able to look at all of this, look at the universe, and interpret it. Through the form of recreation, and that's all poetry is the recreation of our circumstances around us, of the environment around us. This is our side of the story. This is our history. It's my personal history. My poems are my personal history, not just of what I've experienced, but what I've witnessed here in this plane, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why literature has outlasted, you know, dynasties and translation. And so much in war, you know?
Yeah.
So, we'll be here. And it's our form of immortality. You know, what we leave, it's not so much as about what you do while you're here. It's what will be left of you when you're gone. Because the only thing that's guaranteed right now is that everybody's dying. We're all dying, you know. But what then? You know, what now and what then?
Right.
And that's how, you know, I see the world. What now? What can I do now? I'm here now. What can I do now?
you know, and then what happens later? What then? After now is over.
Right.
What will we say then? What will we left then? You know, and how am I helping them be better?
Right.
You know, what have I done to make them better? You know, what have I done now to make them better? And I think creating is one of those things that I've been blessed with the passion and the wherewithal to do. And that's my part.
Definitely. So let's get into that. You know, let's talk about that before we run out of time here. Let, you know, tell the people what to expect from you and what's going on with you and how you are creating you know, an empire.
Well, for those of you who don't know, I do host every first Thursday open mic night. It's called Back Talk All-Star Edition of the Cypher Open Mic Poetry and Soul. It's every first Thursday, so the next show is May 1st at 9 p.m. from 9 to 11 at the Real Teen Cafe downtown on Adams Street. So please, please join us. It's $5 to get in. There's 3-for-1 drinks, $5 meals.
Only
and
$5.
It's a good peaceful. Only $5. Yeah, I know. So it's me and DJ Monster host every first Thursday there. As well as I do youth workshops, youth poetry workshops. I have a team we're going to Brave New Voices, and I do free workshops for the youth from the ages of 13 to 19 years old every other Saturday at the main library downtown in the teen room from 4 to 6 p.m. So this was an off weekend, so next Saturday will be our next workshop, and every other Saturday after that. And that's from 4 to 6 p.m. My current project out, my new, latest poetry CD is called Ebb and Flow. It's available on iTunes, or you can get it off of Amazon if you don't have an iTunes account. And that's available or Spotify. It's called Ebb and Flow, EbEnFlow, and you can follow me for updates of my performances and events on my Twitter and my Instagram. That's at Ebony Oshun. That's at EbonyOshun. Or you can check out my videos on YouTube or my fan page on Facebook, which is at Ebony Payne English, EbonyPayne, Payne, PAYNE hyphen English, ENGLISH. And that's where to find me.
Cool. Do you have you have another poem that you want to share with us?
I'll share one more piece before I do the adieu, seeing as how it's National Poetry Month and all. Share one of my newer pieces. So this is called One Breath Away. Life happens at 5 a.m. when you're wide awake and there's no one to say anything to. And you're wondering if anything you've been told was true for you. Life is being raised in a Southern Pentecostal household, then discovering the greatest story ever told was already told in several languages and dialects. Centuries before the Catholic Church dispersed the Bible in. At 18, you have questions that borderline blasphemy. My heart keeps asking me to be. I tell her I need more time to heal. Life is your ex-boyfriend calling to apologize for cheating on you before taking his own life. Life is you being too angry at him to pick up the line. Life is living, wishing you could have swallowed your pride long enough to save his life. Lines are drawn better on paper than in relationships. Life, the ability to forgive. And baby, that includes yourself. Life is playing the hand you are dealt with in dignity and grace and one bad-ass poker face. Life is another chance. Life is discovering romance is overrated, and loyalty gets complicated when what's best for you is not what's best for those riding on your back. Life is about picking up the slack,
going hard for what you believe and whom you believe in. I put my faith in God, bless, I'm still breathing. Life is Tupac Shakur ministering to an unsure 10-year-old. Life is Cadence holding her pain in the melody until she was strong enough to spit it for herself. Life is death and what's left of you when you pass. Life is writing poems that impact, remembering to laugh, and losing all you have to gain what you never knew you lacked. It is gaps in your kindness. Fluidity in others' cruelty. Life is grueling as it is glorious. It is the source in us that renders commonplace. And for our sake, may it always be a breath away.
Wow.
Ashe.
So what inspired that?
Just feeling reflective, you know. There are a lot of things that I would like to regret about my experience here on this earth. A lot of things. But I choose not to allow that emotion in my space.
Yeah.
Because I'm very happy with the person I am.
Yeah.
And I would not be who I am if it wasn't for what I've been through. And mm-hmm. so I have to not play into that. When I have those feelings, the best thing I can do is to write it out, you know, because I wouldn't be the same if I didn't make the mistakes, if I didn't have to learn about my pridefulness. I know pride was a lot of what I suffer with when people did something wrong to me. You know, because I'm such a loving person, because everybody that knows me knows that I will willfully give you my love, you know, expecting nothing in return but respect.
Right.
You know, you don't have to give me what I give you, but do respect the gift that has been given, you know? And
yeah.
so when I'm disrespected, I don't take that well. And I never have. And that's something that I struggle with. So it was hard for me to accept people's apologies when
right.
they're wrong. And it took something so serious as someone I loved so much that I couldn't handle the possibility of betrayal.
Yeah.
So when it happened, I was unable, I was stifled, I couldn't even deal with it, I couldn't confront it, I couldn't speak, you know, to him. But he was very damaged. He was a very damaged person, you know,
yeah.
and he killed himself. And I was the last person he called.
Wow.
You know? And I didn't pick up the phone. Because I was still dealing with my junk.
Right.
With my junk. You know, with my baggage. I couldn't even receive an apology. I had to
yeah.
I had to accept that apology via my voicemail. Knowing that, you know, he left this earth without me being able to say, I accept it.
Right.
You know, but then again, if he would have told me over the phone, if I would have answered and he called to apologize, I don't know that I would have accepted it.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't there. I wasn't ready. I wasn't in that. I've made a lot of terrible mistakes. Terrible mistakes, and I'll admit to that. But I just don't believe in regret because who I am now is way better than who I was then.
Right.
And if I would have missed an opportunity to grow, then I cannot consider my life any other way than what it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, you know, I'm a person in perpetual growth pattern. You know, I'm always growing. I'm always reaching. I'm always learning. I'm always developing something better, something new, the 2.0 version of myself.
Right.
And I'm happy with that. I'm happy with that. You know, do I get sad? Yeah. Do I get, you know, the same type of feelings and emotions? You know, do I PMS? Sure. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm able to center myself. I'm able to find my peace. It exists.
Right.
It's not an abstract. It does exist within me, and I'm able to put my hands on it when I
right.
need to and when I should. And that's what's important to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's not perfection, but it's being able to come back to the middle at
mm-hmm.
the drop of a dime at any given time when I need to the most. I can
yeah.
get there. That's what matters a lot.
And being able to recognize it, that's a big step, you know what I mean? To recognize when it's time to get back to the middle, you know what I'm saying? Instead of, I think a lot of times before we really get to a place of knowing who we are and knowing what, you know, knowing our truth, a lot of times we just kind of let our emotions take over. And we let our emotions take over our actions. And we do that so much that we get to a point where it's just like, damn, I wish I hadn't done that. Or, you know.
Right.
Damn, if I had only just, right. you know, walked away, or if only I had just, you know, stepped away for a moment, you know, things would have, the outcome would have been different. But to be at a place, you know, where you're saying that you are now and recognizing, you know, that there's still growth. You know what I mean? Like, to me, if somebody is a quote, I can't remember exactly what it said, but it's basically saying that I think it's a Gandhi quote. It's like saying, you know, if you meet somebody that swears that they know it all, you need to go the other direction, because we don't know it all. We are no matter what level we're on, no matter where we are in our lives, no matter how many you know, acronyms we have after our name, whatever, it doesn't matter. We all have to continue to grow, and we all have to continue to be consistent in our growth and be okay with it, and realize, you know, look, I'm fucked up. I don't know anything. I know nothing. I don't know nothing.
Well, this is the thing. Emotions are a form of supreme intelligence, but they are also a form of supreme ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And that emotions, they don't know survivalist instinct, because that's not their origin. That's not where they come from. Intellect, you know, is you know, on a basis is rooted in survivalist instinct. That's that left brain, survivalist instinct. That right brain is that emotion, which is a form of guided sensitivity that will render you very discerning, but will also render you very clueless when it comes to, you know, basic necessity like protection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like protection or whatever. Love does not know how to protect itself.
Right.
Because that is not the nature. That's not in its nature. You know, love only knows sacrifice.
Right.
Because that is it in its truest nature. So mm-hmm. when you start making cognitive decisions that affect your day-to-day life based on what you're feeling, especially if that feeling is love, you know, you are not acting for your survival.
Right.
That's
you make the hugest sacrifice. You sacrifice yourself.
Life itself. Yes, yes. That's what happens. That's what happens. And so when it gets to that, you know, there's a intellectual component about it. Because like my dad always told me, and this is just based on my love life, not my regular life, but I understood what he meant. He was like, you're right. You can't help who you love, but you can help who you date. So when you decide to accept a date from someone using your intellect, it won't matter 3 months later if you end up in love with that person, because you've made a smart decision about who you're dating. So therefore, who you fall in love with will line up, will be in line with that form of intelligence.
Hmm.
You know?
Go ahead and preach, Daddy.
So that's how you protect yourself from yourself.
Right. Right.
Whatever. In a sense. So, I mean, and then I was just like, whatever, Dad. You know? You just don't want me to be happy. You know? But I like it. You know? But as an adult, you know, it makes a lot of sense. It makes plenty. It makes plenty. And we just have to, as human beings, have to understand the differences, you know, between emotions and intellect. You know, what place does it, and what part and what role should they play in the priority scale in our lives, you know?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Cool. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up today's show. Once again, Ebony, man, thank you so much for guest hosting with me, man. And again, much love and peace to my two co-hosts who are out. Sage is with her family, and Marie. Hope y'all feel better, and I hope, you know, I can't wait for y'all to jump back on next week. Any other closing words you have for the people, Ebony?
Just peace and blessings, love and light. That's all. That's what I wish, my greatest wish for everyone. For real.
Awesome. Good deal, good deal. And for anybody else that's out there that's listening, for all the folks that are listening online, make sure y'all follow Ebony at Ebony Oshun. That's EbonyOshun on Twitter and on Instagram. Make sure you follow me at I Am Love Reigns. That's IamLoveReigns. Make sure you check out, hashtag The Conscious Creative, and join us every Sunday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Next Sunday, I'm very excited that we'll be broadcasting live from a poet. I think she's been here long enough, been in Jacksonville long enough to say that she's local. But a local poet by the name of Ray Monet, she's debuting doing
Ray
her book.
Monet.
Yeah, she's releasing her book entitled The Birds, the Bees, and the Boudoir. So that should be interesting. She
hashtag
has
very sexy.
Yeah, very sexy, very sexy. So it's going to be a pajama jammy jam next week, next Sunday at The Norm. And myself and Marie will be broadcasting live there. The show starts at 6 p.m. I'll be performing. Onyx 7 is hosting. There's a host of other performers. Mr. Alpete is DJing. I know MJ Baker is performing. Lady G is performing. There's a ton of people performing. So this is definitely going to be an interesting show. I'm a little nervous because it's going to be taking me out of my element a little bit, but I'm excited. So we'll be broadcasting live next week. But again, thank you all for checking out The Conscious Creative. Make sure y'all join us every Sunday. And if you're in Jacksonville, you're not doing anything tonight, if you're not going to Sex on Stage, hosted by Moses West, come on out to the Downtown Cigar Lounge and hang out with me. I think Ebony will be there. You know, come hang out with us. We're pretty cool. You know what I mean?
Come
check us out tonight at 8. Kendra Cash is a feature tonight. So y'all come check us out. And I'm trying to think. I was trying to think of a good way to close, to end the show. And I think I'm going to end it like this. You know, I'm going to end it with one of my favorite poets. Who is also one of my favorite singers, Tank, man. Tank and the
Tank.
Bangles.
Tank! That's
yes.
A boy heart. That is a boy heart also from New Orleans, like that.
Yes.
I funny. But
yes.
Yeah, that is a blessed queen I admire so much.
She's so amazing,
much.
Man. And she's so down to earth, and I just love her to pieces. So, Tank, this is for you, my love. I'm gonna throw out one of my favorite boxes and squares. So y'all take a listen to Tank and the Bangas.
What have been fish? What have been meat? What have been eggs? What have been greens? What have been milk? What have been fruit? What have been vegetables? What have been soup? I would have been good for you. You are like a pop full of everything we know. I'm tired of putting my trust, my love, my hair, my shoes. You are like a square full of the words that's in the air. I've got a mouthful of questions, baby. You got a
I feel like the hole's inside my suit, and don't nobody give a lot of me and no food. I've got a mouthful of questions, baby. You got a bunch of me with my answer. Hey, hey, great, hey, milk, brew, milk, brew, milk, brew, milk, brew, milk, brew. Maybe we can go to the mall, skate down the hall and cruise. Or do you need permission from your mama? I think I need permission too.
I want to do dumb things. I'm talking strolling in the park things, stealing kisses straddled on park swings in the daylight while the ice cream van sings a little melody for us to move to, like. I'm talking some midnight dedications of rare groove tunes, and we're all across London. We use this real names too, because we're not fazed by who cool, who a fool. See, I want to do everything with you, so
I fantasize about
you just every day, and I want to do just everything. Say baby, say everything, and now I want to run holding hands. See, I know that we can do this in a field of purple grass sprayed with green or white tulips under a sky washed orange by an everlasting sunset. And you know what? I ain't done yet. See, I want to catch a ride off some crimson-colored stallion. We can sail a boat made of water straight into the horizon, or we can catch a lift on a cloud that silver lining's really platinum. But you know what? I still ain't done yet. See, I want to, and I was thinking we could
sit over, baby.
And if you wouldn't mind a little.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're ready, we can always.
Oh, baby.
I'm going to be on the phone with you for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours.
And I want to do
I'm no longer scared of your future, baby, because after tonight, I'm going to be in your history forever. See, I about you just every day, and I say do just say everything, say everything, say everything, say I
fantasize about you. Every day, and I want to do just everything
for you,
baby.
Just
everything, and I fantasize about you. Just every day, and I want to do just.
Don't you keep